Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Well, welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg, and today I'm joined by Andre Kleiner. Happy Friday, Andre.
Happy Friday. Yeah, I'm excited. It's a long weekend coming up.
That's right. We're squeezing in one more recording session before the 4th of July holiday, which happens to be a three-day weekend here for us. I don't know exactly when this episode will come out, so this might sound kind of weird when it comes broadcast on a Monday or a Wednesday, but anyway, it's good to talk to you again, Andre. And one of the things, I know that you're constantly reviewing papers, and as the editor for Wiley, you're seeing book proposals and, you know, and talking to different authors. But you mentioned just recently that you were working on a standard, on a, I think for the SAE, the Society of Automotive Engineers, if I remember right.
Yeah, yeah. I'm basically finishing a final draft of a standard on reliability prediction, but not kind of your traditional reliability prediction when you use one of the handbooks like Telcordia or, God forbid, Mill Handbook 217 or ISO 62380. This is based on field data. And the reason basically I'm working on it, because people get so hung up on using the handbooks, and especially with functional safety standards, which we'll probably talk about it later.
Doesn't Telcordia, I think it was John Healy that was working in that area, and they were always looking for field data, and they would incorporate field data from many different sources right into the standard is to create the basic structure of their deal. And I think Mill Handbook 217 was based on field data collected across different military platforms. So how, when you say it's based on field data, is it different than the way it's based in these other standards?
It's different in several regards. I mean, yes, all those standards were originally based on some kind of data collected in the field. But by the way, nobody kind of seen the regional data going into this. Mm-hmm. But also those standards, they have a lot of models, which actually first you come up with this what's called base failure rate. And tell the truth, all of those handbooks, even though they eventually get different results, they actually use pretty much the same principle. Mm-hmm. It's basically some kind of failure rate, which is base failure rate or some kind of basic number. And then you adjust that number based on different stresses, like if it's ground mobile environment versus just benign, something like your computer and your desktop computer, or versus, I don't know, avionics, stuff like that.
Right.
So basically you have some data, but then this data gets really, diluted by all those models and fudge factors and everything. And eventually you end up with a number which really, not the number you get from the field.
Well, I saw one company off in Denmark that they had a page for about reliability predictions based on standards. And it was basically a wizard-looking creature or character cartoon with a crystal ball in front of him. And they said, do you want a reliability prediction? Push the button. And then it would roll a bunch of numbers in and said, well, if you don't like that number, push the button again.
Yeah, pick one. Pick the one you like, yes.
So they, you know, but they recommended, and I think what you're getting at is that, you know, they had existing products and similar products. And so they tended to use their own internal history, and they would do the Weibull analysis or appropriate time to failure data. And they had ways to collect data on systems that were failed or operating, and they used that to build a model for the new product that they're doing as the basis for it. So they were using field data, but it was their own data.
Well, by the way, Fred, I think we need probably to take a couple of steps back and kind of maybe talk a little bit about the fundamentals. I mean, why we do reliability prediction and what it is for the listeners who are maybe not intimately familiar with the process. So I mean, you want to go ahead and kind of just say a few words, what's the basics and why we do that, and I'll add some new info on that.
Okay, sure. The basic idea is that if you're developing a product or you're installing a system, somebody somewhere is going to ask, well, how many failures are we going to have? You know, or when are we going to have failures? Or we will ask a question is it reliable enough so that we won't pay too much on warranty, or the customers will have a good experience with the performance of the product? So however that is phrased, is we as reliability professionals are often looked to predict the future performance of the reliability of whatever it is we're working on.
Yeah, and this is done when basically product does not exist yet, at least most of the time. So you don't have a hardware, you don't have anything you can test. So all you have basically bill of materials, so in design, and you expect it to produce some kind of number on reliability or failure rate or MTBF, which
you, let's not go there.
you love so much.
But I mean, the first time I was asked, it was a new product being developed, and it was a bit different than other products we were making at the time, heating cables. And my boss said, we want to put this in concrete and we want it to last 20 years. Can you figure out, will it last 20 years? And so I thought about it for a little bit and I read a little bit of in the literature. And my conclusion was, let me get a bunch of samples, you know, a couple thousand installations of this, and wait 20 years and measure it. And I can tell you how many last 20 years.
And you'll get a pretty accurate result, right?
Well, yeah, if you take pains to accurately measure it and monitor it and define failure correctly, all those things. And he said, well, you know, I understand you want to do it right and get a good number, but you have 6 months. We need to make a decision as to whether this product is worth the risk to put in concrete, because if we have to tear up bridges to take this stuff out and put it back in, it's horribly expensive. And we're taking the risk that if it's not good enough, we pay for the repair. So we want to make sure that this product will last 20 years. So have fun, go work on that. And I'm like, okay, this is a critical, important decision about the future. And now what do I do, right?
Yeah, and then you, like, if that was like 20, 30 years ago, you would probably go and use Mill Handbook 217, which was at that time pretty much the only source, like a handbook, and look at the parts and find a failure rate. And since it's using exponential model, then the math gets pretty simple. All you have to do is add those failure rates and get one big failure rates for the whole system, and that would basically you would use to determine your reliability.
Well, it's one of the things when I was working with Hewlett-Packard, when they were just doing test and measurement systems in the 60s and 70s, they also did all of their own repairs. And so they did complete diagnostics. They wasn't just quickly, you know, slap a new motherboard in it and ship it. It was they wanted to understand what failed. So they did detailed failure analysis and diagnostic work and so on. And they collected that into a large database. And that became the basis for the internal predictions. So they had history with a great number of parts and different systems. And if a new part came in, they would think about it and discuss it and do, you know, risk analysis and so on. But they basically would put it in a system and gather data about its failure rate over time. And then they had their designs, their customers, their data. So that kind of prediction was actually pretty good.
Well, yeah, it, this is the best probably you can do. But again, when today when you hear the word reliability prediction, that, I mean, probably 99% of the time, that means you go and in collect, not use any existing data, but basically go to one of the handbooks and collect all those failure rates for individual components and add them together and get mm-hmm. the whole system.
Or you might supplement it with vendor data. Go to data sheets or vendor websites and say, well, what's this part's not in the database. So I have to find a failure rate someplace. But the idea is, you're right, is just basically add the failure rates, maybe make adjustments, but that's about it. Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is, everybody understands that this is a lot of limitation. I mean, probably the biggest limitation is that we all know that the electronic systems, most of the time, it's not the components which is failing. It's often interconnects, like SATA joints, connectors,
fans. That's my favorite.
Yeah. Yeah, other things in fan, it's still if you can include it as a component, but I'm strictly talking about interconnects, which fail more often. Mm-hmm. And they are not part of the at least not a handbook, but they can be partially in field databases, and I can explain it later. But again, the thing is, most of the time that's the handbooks what you use, and this activity has been kind of dying down for quite some time, which everybody was happy about, because like I said, I have not met a reliability professional who would say, oh yeah, this is a really good activity, it's really value added, we're getting really good results when we do reliability prediction. I mean, pretty much everybody who, at least who I met, who I know, understands, okay, this is, you get the number, which may have absolutely nothing to do with in common with what you're going to see in the field.
Yeah.
But what happened lately in the last, I'd say, 5-6 years, at least in the automotive industry, where Europeans came up with what's called functional safety standard, and it's actually proliferating in other industries, especially if you're working for building something for the European market, and now it's actually Asian market and North American market kind of catching up. Mm-hmm. But basically, part of that activity is calculating a failure rate, and now it's in FIT, F-I-T, which is basically failures per billion hours.
Right.
And now I kind of keep joking that this thing basically threw us reliability professionals back like 20-25 years. Mm. So now it's back and alive and kicking, and we need to deal with that. So,
well, I agree with you. It's not a step forward at all. What I look at with the standards is that I think the concept is sound. The idea is that the only, you know, unlike the stock market, if we, our past performance is an indicator of our future performance. If you're making a product and 80% of it is identical to previous products, well, that 80% is probably going to behave very, very similar to what it has in the past. And that's valuable information. But the further we get from understanding what's in the database or what's in the particular standard and so on, the more risk we're taking that it's not really representative, it's not terribly useful. Now, one of the things you've mentioned, I don't know, this new safety functionality type approach or standard, there's MIL Handbook 217, we mentioned Telcordia. I think there's probably a dozen or more. I think the French have one, the Chinese have one, the British have them.
Yeah, French, I think it's called FIDES or FIDES. I pronounce this differently.
Yeah.
Another one which is really kind of giving us a lot of trouble is made by Siemens. I think it's called SN29500.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the problems with it is most of the German automakers like Daimler or BMW or VW, they often force the suppliers to use it, and in my opinion, it's probably as bad as Mill Handbook 217,
right,
if not worse.
Well, you've seen the studies. Jeff Jones, who actually is, I think he was leading or a significant member of the IEC durability set of standards and working body. Some years ago, he and Hayes wrote a paper, the comparison of electronic reliability prediction methodologies, and they looked at Mill Handbook 217, HRD4, the Siemens one, CNET, Telcordia, and they were looking at one circuit board or a collection of small circuit boards, which they had good field data for, and they compared the predictions, doing it by the book, following all the directions of how to do a prediction, and they saw plus or minus orders of, or one or two orders of magnitude off from each other and from the actual results. And one of the conclusions, I asked Jeff about this study, and I said, were you surprised? He goes, no, not at all. He says, look at Mill Handbook 217. Right in the front of that standard, it says, this, the results of these predictions are not representative of your field performance. They are not to be used to predict the actual performance. It's not what it's for. And he said, most standards are really, they're not capable. We don't have enough detail about use cases, about the underlying assumptions. For example, not every component will cause a failure to the system. You know, if a bypass capacitor or if a decoupling capacitor falls off a circuit board, unless it hits something and lodges in a bad place, we probably would never notice that it's not there. But if another solder joint failed on a signal trace, we'll know pretty quickly. He says, so not every failure is equal, and many of these parts count predictions assume every component has an equal capability to knock out your system. So there's some fundamental things in their construction that make it very, very difficult for them to predict the future just by their structure. You can use real data. You can use reliability block diagramming or other ways to model your interactions and dependencies of your system to get a good estimate of the future, but that's not what many of these standards are doing.
Yeah, and you actually asked me a pretty good question at the beginning, like when we were talking about using field data versus the standards, and you said, yeah, actually some field data goes into the standards. But I think one of the factors here is that the field data which went to those standards actually haven't been updated. And even like, for example, if FIDES releases a new version, which is like maybe 2-3 years after the previous one, actually, most of the time, they don't touch those basic rates. What they do, they may adjust the models a little bit, and I mean, some kind of assumptions and in some formulas. But that basic data, which goes into the standard, to the best of my knowledge, is pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the problems with Mill Handbook 217, because the less data which went there were like early 90s, even though there was a release in 95. But the data hasn't changed. We use exactly the same technology today as in the early 90s. Jeez, in electronics.
You've seen circuit boards lately, as you can barely see the capacitors and resistors. They're so small.
Yeah, it's like 02, 01. It's like a little dot on the circuit board. I mean, I need my glasses to just to look at this thing.
Well, it's not that we're getting older. It can't be our aging process at all, that's for sure. But one of the things I've talked to a couple of these, you know, like these folks that are collecting this data have an extremely tough time. When I was at HP, we were asked to provide our internal failure rate data that we were collecting on our products. And our lawyer shut us down and said, no, you can't share that information because of the liability concerns back to those vendors. So you can't give this to, say, Telcordia to use to update their model. And that was a common problem. It was very difficult to get good field data in enough quantity so that you could even build the models in a generic way. Internally, we struggle with it, getting good data and getting good information and getting good failure analysis. And that was at HP, where we really understood the value of that. Whereas most companies, it's, you know, get the product fixed or fix the error and move on. It's not to collect data for a database.
Yeah. Hey, Fred, I think maybe we should conclude this recording and make another one. I want to talk a little bit more about this standards I'm working on. Actually, I pretty much finished it. I need to going through a process, and maybe it's a topic of a separate recording.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, I think we've kind of bashed the standards a little bit here, but I think they do serve a purpose. So let's otherwise, I don't think you'd be putting so much energy into writing one. So let's do that. So as a reader, one, do you use standards? And how's that working for you? Is it useful or not? And what, how do you use it, or when do you use it? Or are you more lucky than I was in that you're spending 20 years in the Dolomites in Italy monitoring this new product for 20 years? That would, you know, let me know if you got that job. I'd come help you.
Yeah, let me just make one addition. In one case where I actually seen a value in this activity, that was when we were comparing several different designs of the same system, and we were looking at different factors, and one of them was actually reliability or expected reliability. Mm-hmm. And then we compared, I think we had like a four or five different versions of the same as was one of the airbag controllers, and we picked one based on many other factors, but one of them was the predicted reliability was the best. So that's probably one of the cases in my experience where I really saw value in this activity. Mm-hmm. Most of the other times I really didn't see a whole lot of value.
Well, let's see what our listeners come up with. Is I'm sure there's going to be some that are defending it and where it's useful, and some won't. And then let's come back and talk some more, Andre, about the work that you're doing and when and where that would be appropriately used. I think that would be an interesting discussion.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Andre. Let's fill up our coffee and meet again here shortly. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.